Hello, and welcome to the Modern Romantic Podcast, where we celebrate and inspire romanticism through passionate people doing incredible things. Hi, I'm a guy with small town vibes, but big city dreams. Hi, I'm Trey. And I am joined by my continue to be annoyed at me host, Emily. Hi, Emily.
Hi, I'm a passionate person doing an incredible thing. I thought I was ready. I'm never ready. Every time he comes up with something new, and it's always something I'm not ready for, and I get thrown for a loop, and then I go, oh, time to be creative on my feet. And for some reason, I'm not.
You know, I, no, have I am, every, but... You hmm? Are. I have every intention of sending you my, like, what I'm going to say before the show, and then sometimes it's just spur of the moment.
Like this.
Like this, and like I'm sorry.
This. It's okay. That's okay. I'm going to introduce our guest.
Okay.
You do. I'm going to do it.
And do it creatively.
With zero rehearsal or any plan whatsoever. This is how we wing it. This is how we wing it. We're here with Abby Graves from The Small Town Tourist today. Welcome to the show, Abby.
Thank you for having me. This is going to be a fun hour, I can already tell.
Yeah. We are goofy, and thank you for being here. It's going to be great.
I'm super excited to do this.
Normally, you're on the other side of this because you are a podcast host.
Yeah, you were actually on my podcast, Emily. Mm-hmm. That's how we got connected through 501 Art Lab. Or is it 510?
510, yeah.
I'm borderline dyslexic, undiagnosed. Okay. But yeah, so we connected through there, and you were mm-hmm. a guest on my podcast. Now I'm a guest on yours. It's kind of fun to be on the opposite end of this because I've spent years interviewing people, so it's kind of fun to see what it's like wearing the other pair of shoes.
Yeah, I was going to ask at the end. Well, I'll save the question because I'll ask it at the end about this experience, and we'll see what happens. But you do more than just podcasting. And we were talking about some art and some other cooking and things like that you do. So yeah. What else do you do?
A lot. So podcasting has been my main creative outlet for the past year now. But the podcast really started out of a blog. So I was really big into writing on the internet for a while, went through a phase of that. And yeah, just creating online content has always been a passion of mine, dating back to high school and figuring out how to use Windows Movie Maker to film the Ice Bucket Challenge that was viral 15 years ago. So yeah, just online content has been my main creative outlet. But in addition to that, I've dabbled in sewing and watercolors and, oh gosh, rhinestoning things, friendship bracelets for the Taylor Swift concert, like, mm-hmm. I'm looking around my basement right now and I'm like, oh yeah, there's a lot of crafting supplies here.
This is the way.
Basically a small scale crafts direct in here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. If it's not a little bit of a mess, what are you even doing?
Exactly. Don't they say like people with the messiest desks are the most creative and driven people?
Oh, well, I'm going to go with that. Yeah. How about you, Trey?
Very much so. And I'm so glad that people cannot see my crafting table at the moment.
What are you working on?
A Renaissance project.
Well, that sounds really kind of cryptic, too, at the same time. Like, it's a Renaissance project. I mean, I'm sure we're talking about Renaissance Festival.
Yeah.
Not.
No, it's a time machine to the Renaissance era. I've secretly downloaded all of Da Vinci's blueprints, and I've found out and solved Einstein's theory of relativity. And yeah, I'm going to go back in time to Renaissance era.
This is unexpected.
No, it's a sorry to be cryptic. It's right now I'm trying to finish up Seth's doublet for the Renaissance era.
Okay.
And a Renaissance festival, and then next up I will be finishing up my doublet and then working on his kilt.
Oh yeah,
that's impressive.
Yeah, well, we'll see how long it takes me. because right now it's slow going, but it's where we're at. But you mentioned that you have done lots of crafting things. And with all of the things that you have mentioned, between friendship bracelets all the way up to sewing, what led you to go search for some of those different crafts or to go pursue those different artistic venues?
I've always been the person who needs a project to work on in some capacity, just because I don't like to sit still and just think about things. I'm a doer. And I think I get that from my parents. So growing up, my mom's a crafty person. She was always picking up a new hobby, trying it out for 6 months, picking up a different hobby. And my dad has always been a tinkerer as well. So his main thing is working on old cars and restoring them. So I grew up in the garage with him, working on those projects. And then he got really into, I don't know if I want to call it woodworking because it's on a really large scale. He's built 2 timber frame homes.
Wow.
What?
Wow.
We went to Barnes & Noble as a kid and he bought a book on how to build a timber frame home. And next thing you know, like, he built a timber frame home with trees that he cut down himself and sawmilled himself. So
cool.
I think it just kind of runs in my blood to constantly be working on something kind of off the wall and unique. And yeah, growing up, I loved art class. I actually dropped out of a math class my senior year to take pottery. I wanted to do creative things with my hands and make pieces that I could look at and feel and touch and see. And at the end of the day, go, I did something. I made something. I contributed to something in my home. And so, yeah, I have always been that person. And in my adult life with adult money and access to a craft store 15 minutes from me, I just picked things up. So the big thing with sewing actually started during the pandemic. So my mom was getting into quilting. That was her latest and greatest hobby. And she found this old Singer Simple sewing machine that someone was selling on Facebook Marketplace for $20. And she's like, hey, I'm going to go buy this and we're going to make a quilt together. And I said, sure, why not? It's pandemic. We're not doing anything anyway.
Yeah. So why not?
She did that. She brought it to me. And this thing was in need of some serious help. Like, whoever had it used it once, messed it up royally. And then so I worked on fixing it for like a week and a half. This thing was just giving me migraines upon migraines. Finally got it working. And I'm like, okay, I'm not ready to start with a quilt yet. I haven't sewn anything since 8th grade home ec class when they made us make a duffel bag. And I sat in the front of the class so the teacher would grab mine to show as an example every day. So I didn't actually make it. The teacher did. So I pretty much was starting from square one on learning how to sew. So once I got the machine working, I have a small dog. His name is Norman. I'm like, I'm going to make him a little doggy bandana. That seems like a really good place to start.
Yeah.
So I made one dog bandana and I put it on him and I said, oh, that's so cute. So then I made 5 more and then I made like 10 more. And then suddenly I had like 45 dog bandanas in my house. And I'm like, oh no, what do I do with 45 dog bandanas?
It's a whole wardrobe.
It was a wardrobe and beyond. And then I'm like, well, you know, maybe I'll throw them on Facebook, see if anyone wants them. And lo and behold, people wanted them. And I started selling them on Facebook and it turned into a business, which,
wow,
was crazy. So I ran an online retail side of it. And then this whole endeavor started in October of 2020. So by the time like July rolled around for 2021, I'm like, oh, well, maybe craft fairs would be a good way to go. I love going to craft fairs. I'll hang out at a craft fair all day. That sounds great.
Yeah.
And so I started signing up for some craft fairs around central Minnesota. And yeah, I've been doing that the past few years. I mainly focus on it in the fall months. So like that window right between like Halloween and second week of December is when I try to book all my craft fairs. And I got my mom involved in it as well. So she isn't making the bandanas, but she started making dog beds.
Oh,
so she took
it to this.
Yeah. So she took it one step further. I think I have the easier gig and I don't like dealing with quilt batting at all. So yeah,
I would agree. She
sews dog beds. I sew dog bandanas and we spend our fall weekends at craft fairs selling what we make.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. I do have to ask, because there is a little bit of a personal reason. My boyfriend and I are actually planning to get a dog. Can I ask what size dog beds your mom makes?
Let me grab one for you.
Oh, here we go.
Okay.
I have the whole demo.
I have one next to my desk for my dog to sleep on. So it's pretty big.
A
little over 3 feet long, but we make them all pretty much one size because we found that the big dogs like to curl up in a little ball and the little dogs like to spread out. So we just keep them kind of one size. If you have a large cutting mat, like for sewing, we pretty much just trace the outline of that size. And
Okay.
It's been really fun.
I will have to keep that in mind. Seth, please pin them and we'll come back to that.
That's amazing though. You have taken something creative and made it into a business and you're still going, which is awesome. And you're still very passionate about it, which is even more awesome.
I think what helps with still going and still being passionate about it is the fact that I'm not doing it year round. I found that my sales happen in that window before Christmas and there's no use exerting my time and energy in the months where I'm not going to be making the sales that I would necessarily want to be making to make it viable. So I condense it into a season and that way it's treated more like a little treat. Like, oh yeah, I get to spend this time of year sewing and focusing on this hobby and you don't get burnt out from it because it is all condensed into like a couple months.
I like that. That's a great take on it. Yeah. I know a potter who does that where it's just kind of there's a one time of year where there's a big focus on like art in the park kind of events and they will work all the rest of the year to be able to do just a couple of those and then it's done. So I like that. I like that balance. That's that sounds very healthy of you.
Yeah. That first year I tried going like just crazy with it. I'm like, we're going to do special bandanas for every holiday and every little thing. And like the sales weren't there. I don't have a business background. So like some light Googling probably would have helped me greatly. But yeah, I found that people want them for Christmas gifts. They want them at the holidays. They want to take their family pictures with all the pets in matching bandanas. And I just kind of found my lane and it's been working out really well.
And you probably have the best dressed dog.
Oh yeah. he is a fancy boy.
You would think my dog would be too. And what a mistake I'm making. I just realized that.
No.
How does Huckleberry not walk around in a cape all the time?
You're asking great questions and I don't want to answer them.
It's because I'm a slacker. It's because he's a super dog without a cape. That's what it is. He doesn't need a cape to be super dog.
Go all Incredibles. Edna Mode, no capes.
Right.
Yeah.
It is kind of fun. So my friend group is really into Halloween and we like to make our own costumes.
Awesome.
So I would always make my dog a matching corresponding costume for all of our group costumes. So like one year we were all different Nintendo characters. And so I made him a little mushroom hat and a little vest to be Toad.
I love it.
And one year we did a SpongeBob theme and the only character that wasn't taken was Squidward, but dressed in his sea bear costume. So like a sombrero and like a pink skirt with like little dingly tassels at the bottom. So I made that for him.
Does he play along well?
Oh, he hates it.
Oh,
he absolutely hates it. He'll wear the bandanas all day long, but he does not like the actual costumes on his body. One year I made him be a corn dog. So I just like sewed a corn cob costume for him and he was a corn dog.
I love it.
Frozen in terror, but the cutest pictures.
Please tell me that these are on your Instagram.
Yeah, they're not on the Small Town Tourist one, but my personal Instagram is super easy to find from the Small Town Tourist page. And all the Norman pictures you could ever want are there.
Yes. Excellent. Oh, my goodness. So with all of these avenues that you've pursued, it's so refreshing to hear you say, like, that you're finding ways to stay interested in them. How did you make the jump from these types of crafts into podcasting and into radio?
So I actually went to college for radio. Circling back to the year I dropped out of a math class to take pottery, what we would do is make pottery and listen to the radio for like an hour every single day. And I'm like, man, someone is getting paid to be a radio DJ and play music and talk about relevant, cool things. Like, why can't I do that? So after high school, went to college for radio. And in the process, I learned that radio was more than just playing music and talking about things. There was so much else that went on with it. And this was kind of right at the time of social media being super relevant in everyday life, like 2014-ish. Mm-hmm. Instagram is becoming bigger. Facebook's been around for a while. So I had been making some YouTube videos with my friends. And once I got to college, I'm like, well, in addition to doing our radio shows for college classes, why not make some videos with it? So me and my really good friend from college, we had a show called Throwback Thursday where we'd play 80s music and talk about news stories from the 80s, which we were just obsessed with for no reason other than that's what we were hyper fixated on. And so I would record our conversations on camera off the air. So everything that didn't go out on the actual show itself, I would chop up and put into YouTube videos. And then we had a channel that was just our little quips when the music was playing. And I'm like, oh, this is really fun. And then I started kind of seeing on social media that there were some DJs in the cities, the Twin Cities is where I went to college, that were kind of sharing some behind the scenes stuff on their social media as well. And I'm like, oh, okay. So like what I'm doing in my free time is what people in my desired career field are also doing. So cool. I'm on the right track. I'm going to be leaps and bounds ahead of everyone else who is vying for these positions. And so I worked at 93X for my internship and helped them out with some of their social media stuff, promotions, that sort of thing. Ended up being a DJ on the overnight show there, where they called me the Backwoods Barbie because they found out I was from the middle of nowhere and I had bleach blonde hair at that time. So yeah, I just was having fun with that. And then an opportunity to work at Town Square Media in St. Cloud showed up and I was in no position to turn down a full-time job. So moved up to St. Cloud, worked at Town Square Media, who at the time was actually in a transition themselves. So it's a radio brand, but they were just starting to kind of make the transition of becoming a media company as opposed to just radio and just audio. So right when I started is when they started requiring all their DJs to write 2 blog posts every day on the website. Whoa. About... Wow. Random things happening locally. Their focus was on super serving local communities. And I'm like, oh, I can do this. I grew up an hour from St. Cloud. I know everything that happens around here. So I was writing 2 blog posts a day, doing my radio show, making videos, literally doing what I would have done for fun, but as a career, which was super cool and super rewarding. And yeah, I just fell in love with the writing process in that. A lot of my coworkers really were not a fan of it because they were old school radio. They're like, we just want to do our shows. We want to do what we've always done for years. And me being this bright-eyed, bushy-tailed 20-year-old girl, I'm like, yeah, give me a new challenge. I want it. So I loved writing and it just felt really good to see people respond to it and learn something new about a small town in their area that they might not have known, find out about a different festival going on somewhere that they might have never heard of, or they see it and they're like, I've been going to that for years. And then they share it and all their friends see it and they start sharing their memories in the comments. And it's like, oh, this is so cool. So I was a couple years into working at Town Square Media and I was driving up to Little Falls for a dentist appointment. And on my way back, I don't know why this inspired me, but I saw like a billboard of Garth Brooks. and I'm like, why don't I start my own blog? Those two things have no correlation whatsoever. But like, for whatever reason, looking at, I don't know where those balloons just came from.
What is happening? She's having a party.
I didn't even click anything. It was a party in my brain. My brain was balloons.
That's great. I'm so happy for you.
I saw this billboard of Garth Brooks and I'm like, why don't I start my own blog? So that's when I started The Small Town Tourist, came home from my dentist appointment, literally figured out how to start a blog website. And I wrote on that off and on for, I started in 2018, I want to say. Something like that. And I'm still picking at it today. It's not as upkept as when I started, but that's any project. You're guns a-blazing right away and then definitely tapers off. But yeah, I still love finding a great story, turning it into either a written form or audio or video and sharing it with the world and it finding the people that it connects with. So yeah, the blog then turned into an Instagram, and then I left my radio job February of 2023. And that is when I could start a podcast due to, you know, contracts and stuff. I wasn't allowed to do sort of outside programming from the radio station, which understandable. Mm-hmm. And so the second I left, I started the Small Town Tourist podcast and went from telling the stories in a written form to an audio form, which was a fun transition to make and a fun challenge too, because I know a lot about editing of audio and radio programming, but I knew nothing about starting a podcast. So there was a lot of Googling. I don't know like what platforms to use, where it's being hosted, how do you get it on places like Spotify and Apple Podcasts. So that was a huge challenge and it felt so rewarding to accomplish that. And then within a month of me starting my own podcast, I had a friend reach out to me and she's like, hey, so I was a guest on your podcast, but I'm thinking I need my own podcast. So then it turned into me helping her, and then it just kind of snowballed, and now I'm helping a lot of people make podcasts, and it's another fun new creative outlet.
I love to see how that's grown. Thank you, Garth Brooks.
Yeah, for thanks, this. Garth Brooks.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing, and he probably doesn't know, but now he does.
I know. I did meet him in my radio days. I got invited to his press conference at US Bank Stadium, and for whatever reason, I was sitting in the front row because no one else was sitting in the front row, and I'm like, well, I'll go sit. I don't care. I'm front and center, great camera angle. I sat there, and then they needed like 15 minutes between his kind of presentation that he gave and then the TV cameras getting all set up for their round of interviews. And Garth got off his little stage and he came and squatted down right next to me. And I said, oh my gosh, hi, I love your wife. I have all of her cookbooks. And he's like, I love my wife too. Let's talk about it.
That's great.
So yeah, I have Garth Brooks, man. He's inspiring in so many weird ways.
You wouldn't have even known.
Nope.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
It sounded like you're about to ask a question.
I was, but I feel like I've been taking all the questions. Mm-mm. Please.
Take the question.
When you say that you've been like helping people with their podcasts and things, who are some of the clients that you currently work for? If you can say.
Oh yeah, I'll talk about all of them until I'm blue in the face. He's got some high level engineers.
He comes for full that circle. Kind of stuff.
So I'm working with some really, really cool people, a lot of inspiring women. My first client is Liz Fidler. She is a flower farmer and public speaker and now podcaster. Awesome. She runs a flower farm in St. Joseph, Minnesota. Huge story of triumph there. She unexpectedly lost her husband due to a heart attack. And she's just grown through the adversity of living on his sixth generation family farm. She found out she was pregnant with their second child the day after the funeral.
Mm.
So yeah, wow. She has this crazy inspiring story. And so she runs a podcast on running your own flower farm. And she also has started one in December about dealing with grief and growing and blooming through it. And yeah, she has some really great interviews and a lot of inspiring content there. I also work with Amanda Radke. She is a public speaker from Mitchell, South Dakota, a huge advocate for the egg industry. And she goes around the country talking about egg-related issues and how farmers can be advocates for themselves, which is awesome. She is, that woman is always on the road. I swear, every time she calls me, she's driving somewhere. And she's another person who hangs out in a lot of small towns. So appreciate that.
Yeah.
And I work with Adele. She owns Babies on Broadway in Little Falls and St. Cloud. And her coworker Summer host the Rolling in the Deep podcast because her name's Adele.
Oh.
And so they get into like things about motherhood and parenting and just that kind of hot button issue for a lot of people. They touch on some really interesting topics, which I never thought I'd be super interested in that because I'm not a mother myself. Baby stores kind of freak me out because everything's so tiny. Like I don't have that motherly instinct to me, but I am learning so much working with her and creating her project. And she's just so inspiring because she's another person who's just an absolute workhorse. And she has this heart of gold where she'll just give you the shirt off her back to help make your day better. So that's really cool. I just started working with Brittany Scovel, who is an outdoor influencer from Iowa. She's big into like the outdoors hunting space. And so I'm really excited. We just launched her podcast last week. The trailer just came out. So first episode comes out this Wednesday.
Exciting.
So that's super exciting. It's been keeping us really busy. Yeah. And then I just helped my husband and his best friend start a podcast too. And so they're doing one on sports, like betting and gambling. I don't totally understand that. I will be learning more, I'm sure, as I edit. But those two literally sit on Discord like all day and chit chat about what they're doing with their sports lineups and all that. And finally, I'm like, why don't you guys just start a podcast? And they're like, oh, yeah, I guess we never thought of that. So they're just getting rolling on that project. So a lot of cool people, really kind of every end of the spectrum for content.
Some real great stuff, though. I really love these topics and places that these conversations must go.
Yeah, it's you just never really know what I'm going to be editing in a given week. And I think that's what's helping prevent some of maybe the burnout I would be feeling if I was just doing like podcast for one type of person. Like I have such a variety of things that I do in a given week that it's always exciting. And yeah, it's kind of the same motion of editing audio, creating a video, making social media, but each element is different in its own way. It's different theme music. It's differently formatted. The graphics are different. I'm making different graphics. So I kind of get to touch every little corner of the project in a different way.
Yeah. And you probably run into, because we've had this before, Trey and I, several people at this point in our existence have come up to us and go, help us start a podcast. Mm-hmm. Tell us what you do. And we'll be like, all right. So, like, for instance, I have sat down with a couple of people and like kind of gone over like, all right, what do you want your podcast to be about? And I've learned that some people just, I don't want to bash anybody because that's not what this is about. Some people just really don't understand what podcasting, especially regularly, means. Mm-hmm. And that most podcasts actually don't make it very far. The statistics are kind of staggering, in fact, if you were to Google such a thing. But I found that some people are just like, oh, me and my friends are hilarious when we are drunk poolside. We should make a podcast about that. And maybe there's content there. And then there are other people who are like, I have this mission and I have this plan. And they're very like, very, they've thought it all through. And they know what they want to say. There's all kinds out there. But very few of them actually start.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if you get the same thing. And can you tell? Like, what do you say?
Yeah. So great example of that actually is another one of my clients, forgot to mention her. Megan, she's actually my second or third cousin. big family on my mom's side. But mm-hmm. she sent me a message last summer and she's like, hey, I see you have a podcast. I want to start a podcast. What do I do? Mm-hmm. And she actually told me she had been kicking the can down the road on this and she was nervous to ask. She didn't know if she was ready for it. And I sat her down and I'm like, okay, so here's the deal. Can you come up with 6 items for episode topics right off the top of your head? And she rattled them all off and I'm like, great, we got a show. Because most podcasts, I actually just looked up the statistic today, they don't make it past episode 3 because people don't realize the amount of work that goes into creating the content. They think it's just sitting in front of a mic and talking. And so sat her down, we came up with the outline of 2 months worth of episodes essentially. And she realized in her own life, she's like, I don't have the capacity for an every week show, but I do have the capacity for an every other week show. She's a busy mom of 4. And I'm like, okay, great. You already know what you want going into this. You're not expecting yourself to go every single week right away. You want to build onto this. And yeah, I think it's just setting those expectations of what it's actually like to do this kind of hobby, because that's essentially what it is. Most people don't start out with thousands of dollars worth of sponsors a month to make this a full-time gig. So yeah, it's knowing what you're getting into with this project. And whenever people come up to me and they do ask, I actually just had a question last week. Someone's like, I want to start a podcast. What do I do? I'm like, okay, baby steps. Can you do XYZ thing? And if they can, great. We can move forward. If they're not capable, I say, think about it, really sit on it. Let it weigh on your heart a little bit and come back to me and I'll help you as much as I can.
I think that's great advice. And the thing that you said about find what's realistic and find what works within your day-to-day life. Emily and I can talk about that. We were wanting to do, at one time do like, I think it was 2 episodes a week that we were trying to go. Or am I misremembering things?
No, when we first started, we were trying to get to a certain goal by a certain time.
Okay.
And it had to do with making Twitch affiliate.
Right.
And so we were doing 2 episodes a week to get that.
Okay. And after like 2 months, we were talking to each other and we're like, this is too much. This is way too much. And we are so burnt out. The beautiful thing about it is that she and I have had the honest conversations about that. And like when something's not working, we talk about it and we refine it. We don't just end it. And it sounds like for your clients, you are that sounding board for things to say, okay, something's not working. Let's talk it out. You are giving them that space to find a path forward, not to say, okay, well, you tried. All right, end. That's not a thing.
No, it's definitely not, especially with my role in their podcasts as not being the face of the operation. My goal is to make podcasting easier because it is hard. There's a lot that needs to happen to make one single show go out and have people be informed about it. And I want them to have as smooth of a time as possible. I want them to have the fun parts, the parts that they think are what podcasting is, the microphone, the guests, the talking. So yeah, I just, when we initially had that conversation of, I want to start, how do I start? It's okay. Set some expectations for yourself. Do you think you can do one every week? Do you think you can do multiple a week? What's your time limit do you think you want on this? Do you want them to be short 15, 20 minute episodes? Or are you looking for hour long interviews? Like, all these things are factors that you need to try to fit into your already busy schedule, because most of the time it's not just bored people making podcasts. It's people who run a business, have a mission, have a story to tell. They're already busy people and involved people on top of that. So it's finding what works for them and not giving up when the going gets tough. Great example of that. I was just talking with Liz on the phone earlier today, and we are just hitting the 1-year anniversary of her show. And we actually hit a big milestone with it that we didn't think was going to happen. So we were super excited. And she's like, you know, there were some times this past year where I didn't necessarily know if we were going to make it, but we worked in advance on that. We knew that summer was going to be busy with her running a flower farm. So what we did is we spent the winter months bulking up an extra 3 months of episodes. We carved out the time to do that, and that ended up providing success for us. It kept us going in those months where there was no time to record, there was no time to book interviews. We had the content made and ready to go.
That's wise. That's really wise.
And it's not going to work for everyone's podcast. Luckily, it worked for us. But like, if you're doing live like you guys do, that's not going to be an effective solution. But if you can find those little things to help make the journey easier, it's well worth it.
Yeah. We've done a little bit of that. Because last year, we actually put out more than one episode a week, even though we didn't record every week.
And that's
because we doubled up some weeks and things like that.
It's what you got to do.
Yeah.
Gotta get the job done.
It was nice to look really active around the holidays when we really weren't at all.
And that's the thing. Most podcasts do take off at the holidays. So
I noticed. And our numbers reflect that the listeners take off as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We saw the exact same thing with all of my clients this year at the holidays.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, expecting that helps. There were two things I wanted to bring up before I forgot, and that was we have a couple other, we've had a couple other guests that also do podcasts, and they have both hit their own various milestones, and so we're super proud of them and super excited. One of them was probably the first podcasting duo we ever interviewed, which was the Bardcast, the with Lisa Goldsmith, or I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry, Lisa Goldsmith and Owen Thompson from the Bardcast, and they do a Shakespearean podcast. They just hit 100 episodes, yay, which is pretty huge for them.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and then Black Fayde, Jasmine, started a podcast, which I'm thrilled and so proud of her because I did sit and talk to her previously about, like, yes, you should start a podcast. This is how to do it. This, you know, and so her podcast is called Fabies and Friends. And I believe their first episode hit 100 listens. So that was exciting too.
That's great.
And I'm just super proud of them as well. And I just wanted to announce that on our show because we love our guests.
Celebrating those wins is huge too. Like, no matter what the number is, if you reach a goal that you've set for yourself, celebrate it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when you have these things that you don't think, you know, you get excited when you're like, oh, we have our first 100 listens. That feels big at the time. And then when you hit 1,000 listens, you're like, do you remember when we hit the first 100 listens? That's like this big now. Mm-hmm. But it's so cool to see that growth anyway and to remember where you came from, your first 100 people, whoever they are. They're little, precious little listeners.
Yeah. They're family at that point.
That's right, they are.
I want to go back through our chat that we have going on, and I want to scroll all the way back to find when we were super excited to hit like 5,000 listens and then just hit those mile markers. I think at some point I consistently used the like Kermit gif of like,
I use that like once a week, I swear.
Same. Yeah, we were like, once you start kind of growing then and the steamrolling starts happening as far as like, you know, it takes like your first however many episodes to get to a certain point, for instance. It took us, was it like the first 10 months to hit 1,000? It was really slow. At least it felt that way to us. But we were like, we're just going to keep doing our thing. We're just going to keep plugging away. And then within the next month, we hit our second. Like, we hit the same goal again. Like, our first 1,000 listens took 10 months. And then it took us 1 month to hit another 10,000 or 1,000 or whatever. And we were like, what is happening? And it was really great that we finally, like, felt like what we were doing made a difference. And that feeling is pretty awesome. Well, you can probably relate to that.
Oh, yeah. So rewarding. Like, I've had that feeling so many times. When you hit number one ratings for a radio show after 4 years on the air. Like, I remember when we got that ratings book in, my boss literally, I had just got back from my lunch break and I was getting ready to do my afternoon show. He literally like threw me into the wall. He was so excited. And I'm like, this is the best day ever. And then like podcasting, Liz, my client, we hit 50,000 downloads a handful of months ago, and we went through all of our screenshots of the numbers because, like, every time we'd hit a big milestone, we'd screenshot it, send it back and forth to each other. And
it just,
and then now, we're experiencing that kind of like snowball, and it's like, oh my gosh, like, it's insane how it can just suddenly take off, but it takes months and months of work to get to that point. And I always tell people when they're starting, I'm like, don't let the numbers betray your mindset. Because it's a slow burn. You're building an audience from scratch, unless you already have 100,000 followers or something.
Right. Yeah.
But for the most part, you're building an audience from scratch, even if you do have all those followers, because it's a new platform and it's a new way for them to consume your content. So you can't let the numbers get to your head. You just got to keep doing what you're passionate about. And if you are truly passionate about it, the people will come. It's like, what's that sports movie? Field of Dreams, if you build it with them.
I believe that too. Yeah. We've seen that to be, we could attest to that as well. Trey didn't bring his tens of thousands of, hundreds of thousands of followers, but.
I do have my boyfriend and he's a fan, so I've got him. I think we'd also be remiss. Abby, I'm going to say that really, I feel like you're the Sandra for all of your clients. But I really have to give a major shout out to Sandra, who works as part of our team. She may not be seen on the podcast, but let me tell you how much this woman is working behind the scenes. So to all the Sandras of the world, Abby, this includes you, we say a huge thank you to you for all the things that we either do know that you do or don't know that you do for us.
Well, and huge thank you to her. She was so great at setting all this up and like the thorough, clear, effective communication, like chef's kiss.
Thank you. Yes. And thank you, Sandra. 'Cause she is awesome. Everybody needs a Sandra in their life. I hope she's listening to this. She will eventually.
Somebody clip this. Somebody send it.
Oh yeah, somebody clip this.
So when it comes to podcasting, you have had so many wonderful things to say and so much great advice. I'm curious on the receiving side of that. What is a piece of advice that someone gave to you that you still think about to this day?
Good one.
Ooh, that's a great question. I mean, just being yourself is huge. I mean, I remember when I first started doing on-air training at 93X, I had this idea of what I should have been doing. And so that's what I did in my, we'd have to do like mock shows. And then Pablo, the afternoon guy, was helping kind of guide me on this journey because I was just fresh out of college. I didn't really know what I was doing. I didn't have any real radio experience. And so I was doing what I thought I should be doing as a rock radio DJ. And he's like, no, this is not it. You just got to be you and be true to who you are. Don't try to be someone else because that person already exists and they're already on the air on that same station. So don't be that person because people are going to pick up on that. You just got to be who you are to your core. Be just dang near unapologetic about it. And the right people will find you when they need to.
That's solid, solid advice. I love that. That is true for a lot of areas. Well, everywhere. But for sure. And it's easy. I'm sorry, go ahead.
There's only one of you. So be the most one-est of you can be.
And that's really the easiest path anyway.
Mm-hmm.
There's no having to remember anything or.
Nope.
Yeah. Are you yourself, Trey?
No. No, of course.
I know you are.
So what do you think? Why do you think that there are people who don't maybe feel like themselves or don't present themselves as themselves when they're getting started in a business like radio or podcasting?
Social media, plain and simple. The pressures of the internet and society can just be so much. And coming from a small town, too, with that perspective of kind of everyone being up in your business for better or for worse, like everyone knows your next move before you make it. So it makes you almost self-conscious. And that's kind of how I was in high school and through my early 20s. I'm like, oh my gosh, everyone's watching me. And I was putting myself on display too, being a radio DJ, like a public figure. I'm like, oh gosh, everyone's kind of watching what I'm doing. But somewhere along the way, I just was like, I don't care anymore. Like, I just want to be me. I want to be into the things that I'm into and I'll find my crowd. And I did. Like, the second I started sharing the weird things I was into and the goofy things and letting my Taylor Swift freak flag fly, like you find your tribe. And it's hard because everyone puts out this version of themselves on the internet that they want people to think that they are, when it's just so much easier to be yourself. And you don't have to be perfect and you don't have to have the same body as Kim Kardashian. You don't got to be tan all the time. Like, you can just be whoever you are, and that's more than enough.
100%. Can confirm. Yep.
I mean, as much as I love watching the Kardashians, I don't need to look like them. It's fine.
Right. The world already has them.
Yes, they already exist, and we can consume them whenever we want to.
Right. It's a lot more work. Like, well, and I said before, it's easier to be yourself, but it is a lot of work to try to be something that you're not or that you think other people want you to be.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to being the small town tourist, you then have a passion for what's going on in the areas around you, which is central Minnesota for the most part.
Yeah.
Just to clarify for some of our listeners, in case they wonder where St. Cloud is. And so I want to talk about the passion you have for the small town culture and what's going on around you, and maybe how people in their own small towns or big towns can discover that for themselves in their own areas.
Yeah. So I grew up in Long Prairie, Minnesota, which by small town standards is actually kind of a big town because it was the county seat, but we didn't have a Walmart, so it's not technically a big town.
That's the gauge.
We literally got a McDonald's the weekend I moved out of that town.
Oh, wow.
My dad and my sister and I woke up at like 4 a.m. to go get in line at the drive-thru. We brought our dog with and everything. It was a big deal.
So, it's a family affair.
What? Yes. Family affair. So yeah, I grew up in Long Prairie, population about 3,000. And like any good girl in a Hallmark movie, I was clamoring to get out of there. I didn't want to be there anymore. My best friend was going to the U of M for college. I was going down to Mendota Heights, and we were just counting down the minutes until we could move to the city. Like, that's all we wanted. We wanted some excitement. We wanted the hustle and bustle. And I lasted a year down there before I'm like, no, I want to go home. There was just something missing in being in a sea of humanity that you just don't get. Like, I missed going to the grocery store and people asking how I was and knowing my name and asking how my parents were and how did my sister do in the latest cross country meet. Like, I wanted that sense of community. And yeah, so I got out of the cities. Thank Jesus. And St. Cloud, which is another larger town, but I'm only an hour from my hometown. And I spend most weekends in my hometown or bebopping around that area. And yeah, I love the fact that the community pulls together when something big happens. If someone needs help, the benefit is going to be pretty much everyone from town showing up. Prime example, just this past weekend was the Prairie Plunge in my hometown. They were raising money to help support the Long Prairie Fire Department, which my dad was a part of for 20 plus years. And they asked me to DJ the event and bring my music set up because I'm also a wedding DJ. Another creative passion project.
Mm-hmm. It never ends.
So yeah, I DJed out there, and it's so cool to see the community come together and support a cause. And I am constantly being tapped to help out with things like that, and I love to do it. I got asked to help out with an ATV rodeo coming up this coming weekend. I'll be helping with a organization that helps get disabled veterans out on hunting and fishing trips. And just there's something like that going on almost every weekend in those small communities, and they're always supported, which is so cool. Like, it's just neighbors helping neighbors, whether they know them personally or just know their name. Like, they're showing up for each other, and it's just so special.
Absolutely.
Makes me think of, there's a city close to where I live called Waxhaw. It is, going to their downtown area is wild, but there is such a resurgence of that small town feel to things, but there's also such a great sense of community that you were talking about, just neighbors helping neighbors. We sat, my boyfriend and I sat and talked to a store owner for a solid like 15, 20 minutes about just life. And there's no pressure to buy anything. It was just like a person trying to relate to another person. It was great.
Yep. There's just something about it. It's magical. And don't get me wrong, it's not all sunshine and rainbows. I'm well aware of that. Like, things can get really toxic in places like that, especially with those smaller communities. Like, there's drama that can happen. We all know that that's a thing. But for the most part, the greater good is what's thought of in every situation.
Yeah. And I think part of it's about what you focus on as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're there for, you show up for the greater good events and the things like that, that matter.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as someone else looking for the small town culture in their own area, I'm thinking to like, here's a, for instance, I used to live in this area of Wisconsin, and near that area, I don't know how much I want to give away. I used to live in, we'll just say near Hudson, Wisconsin. So right off the Mississippi, across from Stillwater, Minnesota. And near there, there's a place, and there's all these billboards around for the Crystal Caves. And the Crystal Caves are where you can go, and I don't know because I never went to the Crystal Caves. And it's sad because I lived actually very close to the Crystal Caves. And there's billboards everywhere. And I'm like, whatever, this touristy thing, I'm not going to take part in that. And I sat there and I thought, especially before our talk today, I thought, well, you know, what a horrible attitude I had about something that was probably actually really cool and in my own backyard. And I didn't bother to explore it. And I talked to other people in that area, like, hey, what, when I first moved there, especially, what are the Crystal Caves? That sounds kind of cool. Is it like the Dark Crystal? Are we talking like, is it a cool underground fantasy land? Right. Are there Muppets? Right. Is this where Fraggle Rock is? Maybe I should go. And everyone was like, no, we've never been. And people who had lived there their whole lives had never been. And I thought, this is sad. And I let that influence me, and I did not go. And I think back to that, and I have a little regret. Like, I should have bothered to do that. So I guess my question is, obviously we'd encourage people to maybe go explore those things, but do you find the same to be true?
Yeah, it's one of those things, like, you don't know what you're missing till you leave. Like, growing up in Long Prairie, we have a drive-in theater. It's one of the last few remaining in the state. What? And I just always kind of took it for granted because I didn't even know real movie theaters existed until I was like probably 8 or 9, because we'd only go to movies in the summer in the car. So
right.
I just thought that was a movie theater. And then moving down to the cities, and you have to describe where you're from to people. And I'm like, well, we have a drive-in. They're like, oh, I've never got to do that. I've always wanted to. What a cool experience. You guys must go like once every few years. I'm like, that was the only entertainment on the weekends. I was there like multiple times in a given weekend watching the same movies. So yeah, it's just like, you don't really know what you have until you look at it from an outside perspective. I kind of feel, I always say I have a crush on the town of Little Falls, and I don't know if the people there, I'm willing to bet they don't feel the same way I do, but like, I just think it's such a cute and charming town that has a great chamber of commerce that's always trying to do something really special for the community. And they have like a beautiful park, and they have this huge, huge arts and crafts fair. And like, there's just so much going on. And I get the perspective of someone living 30 minutes away from it. So it's like a fun little destination to go to. And yeah, I just, it, I know the locals are like, I can't be here craft fair weekend, it's too busy, but it's so special and it's so cool and it's so unique to the town. It's just got a lot of personality to it, and you just got to take one step outside of your circle and go, what would someone not from here think is cool to do? And if you haven't done it, just go do it.
Yeah. Yeah, you could be missing out. If you don't like it,
you can't complain until you know what you're getting into.
Mm-hmm. You could end up on the Muppets and not even know.
Exactly.
You could discover Fraggle Rock. Now we have to go.
To the Crystal Cage?
It's not that far. Yeah, it's not that far. A few hours.
Okay.
Bring your own Muppet.
BYOM. I actually kind of love that idea. I wonder if anybody's ever done that. Like, maybe they have them there. You could rent one.
You should just, find like a cheap knockoff Muppet online and bring it with you and take pictures. That'd be pretty epic.
Mm-hmm. Emily, I have Josh's birthday idea planned now.
Oh, mm-hmm. He's listening. So tell me later.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, he can probably figure out which one what I'm going for. So Abby, just a couple like last questions from me. As far as when it comes to someone, if they are interested in going into podcasting, you've now received received advice from other people. You've been in the industry for a while. You come and you meet somebody who's fresh to being a podcaster. What is the one biggest piece of advice that you want to give to that person who wants to start a podcast?
Just go for it. Find a support system to help you do it, whether that's just someone who's going to keep you accountable for posting it on time or at least in a timely manner, or finding a producer to help you make it. I know that's not feasible for everyone, especially just starting out, but find someone to hold you accountable, whether that's someone who's just going to make sure it gets posted or even a co-host of some sort to carve out that time to do it. Because if you say you're going to do it and you start it and you have nothing to keep you accountable, you will not continue to do it and you won't see any success if you quit. So finding that battle buddy for the process is huge.
That is huge. I like the term battle buddy.
Some days it feels like going into battle.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Battle buddy. No? Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was missing that cue. I was missing the cue.
It's like, okay, well, nope. All right.
We've done this before.
Oh, yay.
Oh, that is so Swiftie coded. I love it.
Isn't that great?
The other question I have is, since we've mentioned Taylor Swift in passing, I do have to ask, which era are you a fan of?
Ooh, it depends on the day. General overview, I am a huge fan of the Lover era.
Ooh,
I feel like it was an underrepresented era due to the pandemic. I mean, came out in fall of 2019. Bad timing. But I think there are no skips on that album.
Okay.
So I'm a Lover girly. I'm also a Folklore girly. I love Folklore so much. And I do have all three different versions of the Tortured Poets Department that have been announced on the way
cool.
to my house because I have no self-control.
Hey, those are limited edition. They are gaining memories.
I know. I'm a sucker for anything limited edition. And Taylor Swift, she knows the keys to my bank account.
I feel like Taylor Swift is kind of America's romantic.
Yeah.
You know, I've always loved her videos. Her videos always, in her music in general, always has romanticism in it. Whether it's Folklore or... what was the other one you said?
Lover.
Yeah, all of that is just rich with it. And like, Trey, if you haven't watched Wildest Dreams, that video with the yellow dress.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And And the wardrobe in the drama, but the wardrobe in oh my gosh, it's escaping me. It's the one where she like hits his car with the tire iron and she's
Blank Space.
Thank you. Yes, that's it. I can hear the lyrics, but I couldn't think of the name of it. And the wardrobe in that is incredible. And she's standing on a horse. That's like kind of amazing too. But it's also romantic. I've always thought like Taylor Swift would be an ultimate guest on this podcast just because of that romanticism aspect. And also one day I want to make a music video with her.
Yes.
And there I said it out loud.
The romanticism, even in the songs that aren't like overly romantic, like I think of probably her most hated song, Me, which was the first track off of Lover. Mm-hmm. It's been criticized. It's like, oh, this is just campy and blah, blah, pop. But there's so many teeny tiny little details that go into the making of the video itself. It's like, how can you not applaud this woman's artistic taste and style and just depth of everything she's doing, even in a silly song where she spells out the word awesome? Like,
yes. Yeah, she's go big or go home in whatever direction. And that I can get on board with.
Mm-hmm.
Much appreciation for Taylor Swift.
100%. The thing that I love, I will admit, this is a little bit of a love-hate thing. I love that Taylor Swift drops all of these like mystery things and she does like little hints of things. What I'm not always super fan of are like these incredible deep dives into things, but I'm going to positive sandwich that by saying that she is dropping so many allusions to things, or she's making foreshadows of things, but she keeps such a tight lip on what it actually is and retains so much control of the conversation and will do it when she wants to. And it's not because people found it out. It is because that is the time that she planned to do it. Mm-hmm. And I love that she's not giving any secrets away, but also giving them at the same time.
Yeah. And even when like because I fall victim to watching all these like deep dive spirals of she held up two fingers, which means we're going to get a double album. And like, it's just, it's insane sometimes. But I love that. Like, even when the craziest, most unhinged things are correct, she still doesn't confirm or deny it. She
right.
just lets it be what it is. And she's like, yep, there you go. Here, there's new music. Enjoy it.
Unintended symbolism that she may have that the fans were the ones that called it out. And it would be a mistake for her to say no.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no, let that be the symbolism they thought it was. It works. It's working. Just like Trey's little Easter egg that he's got going on in the background there. Mm-hmm. I don't know if... What are you doing?
Oh, I'm signaling. I'm trying to Vanna White.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I was trying to figure out what you were Vanna Whiting.
Oh, okay.
I was thinking about the Christmas stocking still hanging from your mantle.
All right, and I will see myself out of this conversation.
I was like, are those really still Christmas stockings hanging from his mantle? I'm not judging, but I feel like there's some symbolism and meaning behind this.
That's an interesting theory. Let's see how it pans out.
Well, we'll have to go watch those deep dives on TikTok later.
Yes.
I may or may not plant one or two of them. Thank you for moving aside so I can zoom in later.
Oh my god. Oh no.
I'll just call you Trailer Swift.
Oh. Oh.
Bad pun.
Oh no, we support those.
Now we've got bad puns.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting layered.
Thank you for going off the rails with us.
I am here for this.
Trey is like, I'm going to mute myself. Well, I don't have anything else. You got anything else, Trey?
Yeah, actually, yes. And I'm sorry if I steal your question, but I know that you and I had both wanted to ask. Do you want to ask it?
I forgot. No, go for it.
Okay. So now that you have been on the interviewee side of things, how does it compare? What do you notice that's different?
That's what I was going to ask. Yeah.
What do you notice that's different? What do you get? What did you get excited about during this interview?
I love how chill this is. Because like going into my own podcast and being the host and being the interviewer, I do my extreme prep. I'm deep diving social medias. I'm finding out what we're talking about. It's usually some sort of small town festival. So I'm trying to find like what's going on for it. Like there's a lot more that goes into it. Whereas here, your lovely assistant made this so easy. I literally just had to click a link and she sent this beautiful PDF of instructions, like so easy, so breezy. And I haven't been able to be a mic two, so to speak, since I was doing mornings on radio the pandemic. So it's been fun to like be the sidekick in some sort of way. So it's definitely a feeling I missed. And it was so much fun. You guys are so easy and lighthearted and goofy. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it.
Did you ever feel tempted to ask us questions?
Sometimes, but I held it back pretty well. I mean,
you could have, but I didn't know if you would like switch into like normal gear at
all. There was a couple times where I'm like, pump the brakes.
Well, okay, so let's open it up. What's something that you would want to ask us about?
Okay, I was scrolling through like all your guys' podcast episodes. I didn't have time to listen to all of them, obviously.
Yeah, no, we don't even either. There's like years worth.
What was it like talking to Ming Tsai?
Man. Oh. That's such a good question.
After the initial shock of having Ming Tsai and him showing up in our feed on the left-hand side, like, oh my God, he's here. What a just interesting person, a person who just like walks into a room and is very much themselves. He was talking a lot of smack, but in a playful way, before the show even started. And it was just so much fun to talk to him and get his perspective. I went from being really super nervous to having such a blast.
I think the person who should be answering this is not visible on the show right now, and that is Josh, because the story behind that podcast is as interesting as the podcast, and it was about how we even got him on the show. But Josh went to culinary arts school, and one of his kind of heroes was Ming Tsai, and so to have, and Josh, if you want to pop on, just go ahead and hop on. So when we were talking, kind of mulling it over, like, oh, maybe we could get Ming Tsai on the show. And then we discovered that there was actually a way to make that happen. I remember the day I told Josh, like, we got Ming Tsai. And he was just like, what? And that was actually part of.
There was quite a bit of freaking out over here.
Yeah. Because he got to kind of meet one of his heroes. And Ming Tsai promptly kicked him off the show and said, don't ever meet your heroes. And it was hilarious and amazing.
He did.
So, yeah, what was it like, though, for you?
Yeah, he said, never meet your heroes. Get off my show.
Okay, but that, like, kind of checks out.
Yeah.
It was pretty funny.
Yeah.
So are you guys, like, big foodies, then, that, like... I suppose going to culinary school.
Yeah, he can cook a thing or two. It's very helpful.
You kind of have to be.
Did you go to Le Cordon Bleu, or where'd you go? I
can you hear?
I was Art Institute.
Minneapolis. Oh, okay. Gotcha. There was no other people my age or gender who went to radio school, and it was like apartment housing. There was no dorms. Like, the school shut down because they got bought out by a medical company and then went bankrupt. It was really sketchy. I was the last to graduate before they shut down. Like, I got an email a month before I graduated, and they're like, don't fail anything. You can still finish and you'll still get a degree, but like, don't fail anything because you can't retake it. So like, super sketch. We partnered with Le Cordon Bleu students for like student housing. So I lived with a rotating gamut of Le Cordon Bleu students.
Did you get to eat fabulously?
No.
Oh.
Because they'd cook all day at school and then they'd come home and eat my boxed mac and cheese.
Oh, what in the world? What a waste.
It was a mess. It was such a mess.
I mean, I'll be honest. When I was in culinary and we'd do the whole thing, particularly in baking, I'd come home with dozens of loaves of bread, or you know, multiple dozens of, you know, buns or rolls or donuts or whatever it was. I would give them away on my way from home, or from school to home. Like the parking attendant, you know, I'd like hand them a whole bag of whatever. I was giving the stuff away constantly because there's no way I was going to eat it all. But yeah,
if they brought stuff home, it was like, because I was mainly with like pastry chefs is kind of their focus.
Yeah.
So there was like random fondant and like maybe a thing of frosting. Like there was one week where I remember like a couple of really good chocolates and that's it. But otherwise it was just like random fondant. I'm like, I can't eat this.
Not really.
Yeah. Pastry side was, that was a whole different animal for sure. Yeah.
Thanks, Josh.
Thank you.
Yeah. Ming Tsai was a good one. That was one of our first really big higher profile interviews.
That's a huge high profile interview. I mean, I'm just getting caught up on Tournament of Champions right now, and he was one of the judges on it this past week. So like, yeah, I was scrolling through and I saw that one. I'm like, oh my gosh. And then what one was I listening to today? Oh, your Halloween one with the scary stories.
With Laura. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm like halfway through that one. So
that, you know what? I want to bring that up since you did. Laura is teaching a storytelling class at the 510 Art Lab starting in March.
Oh my gosh. She's so good.
She's driving up here to do that for a few Fridays in March. And that sounds like it's going to be an amazing class to take. And it's Central Minnesota Arts Board funded. So the price is pretty low.
Oh, that's awesome.
Awesome too. Yeah.
Yeah, I was so sucked into it. I was out for a walk around my neighborhood and like I'm just like tunnel vision enthralled with it. And all of a sudden this huge dog comes like running at me and barking. And I literally like jumped off the sidewalk. I was like, oh my God.
It's Halloween in February.
It's Halloween in February. Well, and it feels like October out. So it's like really setting the vibe. I was in. She sucked me in real good.
She will love to hear that. You're right, Trey.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, I want to say thank you so much for being on our show and to come and chat with us and get derailed and all the funny, silly things that we love to do. But before you go, I want to make sure that our audience knows how to find you online. I'll let you tell that.
So you can find me on Instagram at the Small Town Tourist. And I also have a blog that hasn't been touched in a while, thesmalltowntourist.com. I have it on my calendar this summer to really get back into it. So new podcast episodes come out wherever you get your podcasts. We're doing them every other week right now. And you just got to search The Small Town Tourist on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, RSS, any of the major podcast networks. And on Facebook as well, at The Small Town Tourist.
And it's really a lot of fun content. I enjoy listening and watching your stuff. And thank you for having me on your show, too.
Yeah, you were a great guest. That was such a fun one to edit. If anyone has any suggestions for things that are cool in your town that you think that I should check out, don't be afraid to hit me up. Send me a message on Instagram, on Facebook, because chances are good I'm going to dig into it.
That's a great suggestion. So that's thesmalltowntourist.com.
That's
and
it.
And the small town tourist everywhere else.
Yep. Don't forget the.
The, right. That's important.
Well, Abby, I want to say thank you again and echo Emily. You have been fantastic. I have to say, I love the positivity. I love how much insight that you can bring from your radio job into what you currently do, and how much, just how much of a benefit you are to your clients and to really anyone who is going to be looking into your content. So on behalf of us, I really do say thank you.
Oh, you guys are so sweet. Thank you for having me. This has been just such a treat.
Thank you.
As we close this episode out, this episode, along with probably every other episode, Forever and Ever, will be dedicated to Joe Capone, our moderator, fellow comedian, encourager, and greatly missed friend. You can also find us wherever you tune into podcasts. You can find announcements, updates, and more on social media. Just search for us under Modern Romantic. Thank you, everybody, and go check out what's happening in your local venues today.